Hi there, I'm Sue Alvis from the blog Stories of an Unschooling Family. Welcome to my podcast. This is episode 119. And today I've got a lot of thoughts to share with you. These are thoughts that have been whirling around my mind during the last week or so. And I haven't had time to sit down and write some blog posts about them, so I thought I'd just share them in this podcast. And why haven't I had any time to write the blog posts? Well, I've been working on my book. That is probably why I have had lots of different thoughts this week, as I've been going back through my blog, looking at various stories, trying to fill in all the gaps with extra stories. Yes, I have had some additional thoughts. Also, in more detail, I'd like to talk about teenagers. I think unschooling teenagers are some of my very favorite people. A lot of people moan about teenagers. They get scared about having teenagers in the family. The teenage years are seen as a time of conflict, a time of battle, a time when we have to keep on pushing, doing our duty. And hopefully we'll come out the other side. Well, that's not what unschooling teenagers is all about. When we have teenagers in our unschooling family, it's a privilege, a very special time of life. And I want to share some thoughts on that today. I'm going to start with an update on my unschooling book. Yes, I've been working very hard and getting excited at the same time. I've been writing this book for years, I will admit it. And the book has changed over those years. I think I have much more to share today than I would have done a couple of years ago if I'd published the book then. All my children have continued growing. We've had additional experiences. I've learnt more about unschooling. The only thing that worries me is if I publish this book this year, what's going to happen in a couple of years' time? Well, I look at my book and think, wow, I didn't really understand unschooling that well. I have learned a whole lot more. Will I be dissatisfied with my book? Will I want to go back and rewrite it? Or maybe just do a new version, add in some new stories. Yes, because I have a lot of extra stories that I didn't have 2 years ago, and my book is getting quite big. The biggest problem that I've had is finding a structure for all that I want to say. I tried ignoring my blog and just sitting down and starting all over again. I wanted to rewrite everything from go to woe. Well, it didn't take me very long to work out that that's not going to happen. That won't work at all. Mainly because I have written so much over the past 7 or 8 years. There is no way that I could write it all over again. For one thing, I think I would get bogged down, going over the same ground again and again. But also, when I wrote my stories, they were fresh and exciting, and I think if I wrote them all again, I would lose something, because they wouldn't be immediate. They wouldn't have that sense of excitement that I had when I actually wrote them. I'd be writing it from memory. I mean, I do write things from memory, but I usually write them from memory having already got that spark of excitement. Oh, I really want to share this. And having to share it again just because I want to write a book. I don't think I could do that. So I'm going to use a lot of my blog posts. Yes, they have already been written, but I'm going to modify them. I'm going to edit them, make them as good as I can, update some of them, change the language here and there, and then I will have some gaps, I'm sure, and I'm going to write some new stories to fill in those gaps. So my book, it won't be completely new. If you have explored my blog, you might be familiar with a lot of the stories in my book, my upcoming book, and I hope that's going to be all right. I guess the advantage to arranging all my blog stories into a book is that it brings together what I feel is the best of my blog, and I will arrange it in a way that makes sense to me. Because when I write my blog posts, I just write a blog post maybe about trust today, And then I might feel inspired to write something about a typical day. I might go back in time. I might talk about my hopes, or I might talk about something that I have discovered. It's a mishmash. I certainly don't write in a logical way. That's what blogging is all about. I didn't start my blog as a book, because some people do blog books. They have an idea for a book and they sit down and they start off with an introduction and they work their way through a book. They're writing their blog as if it is chapters of a book. And then when they get to the end of what they want to say, they gather together all those blog posts into a document. They might make some minor changes to each of the stories, each of the blog posts, eliminating the word blog maybe. And of course they wouldn't include the comments, but maybe the comments would affect the posts. Maybe they would go back and modify them slightly, incorporating other people's ideas or progression of thought, that type of thing. And then they would publish the collection as a book. So their blogs are intended to be books right from day one. But when I started my blog, I think in 2011, I never imagined that I would write enough posts to form the basis of a book. I mean, I gave up blogging on that blog, my stories of an unschooling family blog once. I went elsewhere. I blogged about Catholic things, Catholic family things for a long time. And then one day, I decided that I would go back to my stories of an unschooling family blog and tidy it up and then leave it online for anybody who stumbled across it. Yes, I felt that I hadn't tied up all the loose ends. Yes, in some places it was a bit of a mess. So I spent a few weeks looking through my archive, trying to make my blog look as good as I could so that I could leave it. And as I was working my way through the archives, I got re-inspired. And I thought to myself, hey, I want to go back and start blogging again about unschooling. Well, actually, I still was blogging about unschooling, but I was doing it on my Catholic blog. But I thought, no, I want to go back to my original blog, make my focus unschooling, not just write the occasional unschooling post, but work more fully on my unschooling blog. So that's what I did. And now I have a book. Well, I will have a book. As I said, it's taking me a long time, but I'm going to get there. I really feel that I'm making a lot of progress. I'm actually getting impatient. I want to get to the end of it. I can see what I need to do. And I wish I could write faster, think faster. I just want to get to the end, get to the stage where I'm getting ready to format the book. Not so much because I'm sick of doing the book, but I just want to see the finished product. I want to come back and say to you, hey, I did this. I finished my book. I can imagine the satisfaction that I'm going to feel. And also, I don't feel that I can move on to anything else until this book is done. Maybe it will be the finishing chapter to my blog. Maybe it will be the beginning of something new. I don't know where this book is going to lead. We shall see. But one thing that I have discovered, well, rediscovered, is that I can't work fast on my unschooling book and keep up everything else that I'm doing. Now, if I go back a couple of episodes, I think it was the one about making plans. I was listening to that the other day, seeing if there was anything in that episode that I could include in my book, because this is another idea I've had. Not only am I going to use a lot of my stories from my blog, I also want to include content from my podcasts, whether I transcribe them or whether I just listen to them, note down the ideas, and rewrite them in better language as stories. I haven't quite decided, maybe a bit of both. I would like to include a few of the interviews I did with my children. The good thing about this is that people who don't listen to my podcast for various reasons, one of my friends has a hearing problem. Other people just say they haven't got into podcasting. They prefer to read. Well, whatever the reason, this will open up some of the content of my podcast to another audience. Also, I guess it will give people a chance to re-examine the thoughts and ideas that I'm presenting in each episode. Yes, I don't offer a transcription of each episode like some podcasters do. That is because it would take me far too long to do that, and I can't afford to pay anyone to do it for me. So anyway, that's a bit more about my book. Now I can't remember why I was telling you about that. Oh yes, going back a couple of podcast episodes, the one about planning. I listened to that and I heard myself saying, I've got a lot of free time. What am I going to do with it? I have to make the most of that free time. It's a privilege to have that time, and I've got to do something very useful with it. Well, I don't know where all my free time has gone, but I never should have said that, because the last 2 weeks I've been running through my days. I haven't had much free time at all. I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that my husband Andy has gone back to school. He's a school teacher. It is now the second week of the school term. I'm spending more time with my daughter Gemma Rose, our youngest daughter. During the holidays, she spent a lot of time with Andy. They were cooking together, shopping, walking the dogs, doing a lot of things, watching movies. Now it's my turn. I get the privilege of her company during the day, and she's got a lot of things that she wants to do with me, and that's all good. And I'm quite happy to spend the time with Gemma Rose. It just means I can't get up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to go and write a blog post or make a podcast or what else shall I do? I'll do something for myself. First of all, I've got to think about her and what she would like to do with her day and how I fit into that day. So we've been getting up before breakfast every morning about 6 o'clock. I've noticed that the sun is rising a little bit later every week. Yes, we're not going to be able to do this much longer. Well, we're going to have to move our times a bit later on into the morning for running. We're getting down to the park, down to the bush tracks, about 6:20. And it's not quite fully light then, almost, but not quite. We've been doing at least a 5K run. Gemma Rose has been doing 10Ks some days because she's in training for a 10K race. Some days she pushes me along and I do maybe 7.5K, but I haven't yet done a 10K run. And then we'll come home, we'll get the housework done, have our showers, sit down and do something together, go for a walk with the dogs later maybe, watch some movies. We've been watching some videos together, chatting, cooking. Then there's Sophie, who's 16. Each day we have to arrange to take her to work and pick her up again. And I've been spending some time taking her to the gym. At the end of her working day, I've been staying in town, going to the shops or getting a cup of coffee, sitting in a cafe, doing some work there while I wait for her to do a workout. And then there's my book. I would like to work on my book in the evening. The evening is my time. But I find that if I work after dinner, I can't go to sleep. I need that time to relax, to wind down. Getting on the computer and having my head full of thoughts about unschooling doesn't prepare me for sleep. So I've been spending my evenings reading library books or watching the occasional movie, which is good. But unschooling books. If I'm going to finish this book, a few other things are going to have to sort of go on the back burner for a while. I haven't written a blog post for the last 1.5 weeks. That's one thing that I haven't found time to do. And this podcast, it's already 3 days late. So this is what I'm thinking. Perhaps I should just go with the flow while I am writing. Otherwise the book will never ever get finished. I could share a few thoughts from the book as blog posts or in a podcast. Occasionally. And then when I do find myself with a spare hour, like this afternoon, maybe I will sit down and record something, keep my podcast alive. So that's what I'm doing today. I've got a few thoughts that I'm going to share with you. I've also got a couple of draft blog posts to share with you. I found them in my archive as I was doing research for the book. No, I don't know if they're worth sharing, because maybe if they were, I would have already have posted them as blog posts. I wrote them about a year ago, but I'm going to share them anyway. There might be a thought or two there that's worth discussing. I guess I have given you a long-winded explanation of what I've been doing and why this podcast is already 3 days late. Maybe I should stop, get on to some proper content, talk about those thoughts that have been going through my head the last few days. You might know that two of my daughters are vlogging, Imogen and Sophie. They have been posting regular vlogs. We've been talking a lot about vlogging. I actually bought a vlogging book on Kindle, How to Vlog Like a Boss. Unfortunately, none of us have had time to read the book. Yes, we've all been busy with other things. So we haven't yet found out the right way to vlog. But the book is there, and we are all interested in reading it and then getting together and discussing how we could all vlog better. How we could all vlog better. I haven't vlogged for a long time. But yes, I have experience of vlogging. I have had a lot of new subscribers to my YouTube channel recently. I don't really know why. And I have been thinking that new subscribers means that I should make some new videos. But maybe not at the moment, because as I've already told you, my priority is my book. But I do want to vlog again. And Imogen and Sophie and I have been discussing the question, why should anybody want to tune into our vlogs? We have to talk about more than us. There has to be something extra to attract our viewers. Some message that we want to share with people. It's not enough just to say, come along with me through my day. This is how I spend my day. We're just an ordinary family. Why should anybody be interested in our lives? Occasionally when I'm blogging or podcasting, I wonder the same thing. Why should anybody be interested in my family? One of my friends once laughed when she heard that people tune in to hear stories about my family. What's so interesting about us? Aren't we ordinary people? What makes our lives worthy of blog posts or podcasts or videos? And the answer to that, I think, is unschooling. We are living an amazing life. We're not living an ordinary life at all. That is what makes our lives special. Not us, but unschooling. And that is the message that all of us want to pass on to other people. So that was my first thought. We are living a life worth sharing because of unschooling. Unschooling transforms lives. My second thought is about duty. I hear this word a lot. Parents often talk about doing their duty. It's their duty to educate and bring up their kids. And I've been thinking how sad it is that we talk about the privilege of bringing up our children as a duty. We should be thankful that we have children. Bringing them up is a pleasure. I'm not saying it is always easy, because life is very, very difficult at times, but certainly we shouldn't live our lives as a duty. We can get into the habit of saying very negative things about our lives. We've got to do this, we've got to do that. We might sigh and moan about things, complain. Our children might hear us doing that. It's a very negative way to view our lives. Maybe instead we should talk more about the blessings we have, how grateful we are, how thankful we are to have our children. Tell our children that. Pass on those feelings of gratitude, of wonder, of awe, that we are a family, an unschooling family. We have each other, and we're doing our best to encourage and support each other so that we all become the people that we are meant to be. We are surrounded by love, wonderful experiences. It's nothing to complain about. The idea of duty leads me on to a blog post idea that's still in my head. Yes, I promised to write a blog post about taking kids to such places as mass. A few months ago, we were talking about how we pass on our values to our children. And I was talking about how I never have to persuade my kids to come along to church, to go to mass with me. The question never comes up. We just get up, we go. Our faith is like breathing. It's just part of who we are. And I promised to share some ideas about mass and children, about going to mass with children. I was pondering the thought, why do my children never question such things? Why are they happy to come along to mass with us, to pray as a family, to read spiritual books with us? Why is that? Did we do something to encourage that in them? And yes, I think we did. And a lot of it's to do with love, not regarding religion as a duty. We never say, we have to go to mass. I've heard a lot of unschooling mothers discussing the topic of religion and their unschooling teenagers. Are Catholic mothers obliged to force their kids to go to mass? Because going to mass is an obligation. Going to Sunday mass is something that we all have to do. Now I've just said those words again. We all have to do. I don't like those words at all. We don't have to go to mass at all. Nobody is going to come and knock on our door if we don't turn up. It is our choice whether we go or not. We could stay in bed on Sunday morning if we wanted to. Maybe it's our consciences that are telling us to get out of bed, get down to the church. But it's certainly not the church. It's not God. We have free will. I go to mass because I want to. Because I love going to mass. Because God is the foundation of my life. I love going to mass. And that is what I try to pass on to my kids. We don't have to go to mass. We want to go to mass. We love going to mass. I think if we change our attitude and certainly our language, our kids will pick up on it. Why shouldn't they love going to church if we do? We certainly don't want them to feel that they have to go, that there is no choice, that it's a duty. I mean, that reduces our faith to the lowest possible level. Yes, we might fulfill our duty, but does it mean much? Is that enough for God? Is it enough for us? Questions that we could all ponder further. My third thought is about helping each other. I suspect a lot of people criticize our family, and one of the criticisms that we've been thinking about is the fact that we still have a few adult children that we are supporting and encouraging. We haven't pushed our children out of the door at the earliest possible moment. They haven't got to the age of 18 and we haven't said, well, that's it. We've given you 18 years. You're all prepared. Out you go. You're going to have to sink or swim. I've read a lot of things about how we shouldn't mollycoddle our young children. We should just, yeah, push them out there, make them work. They have to learn. They have to stand on their own two feet. And it looks like, in a way, that my kids aren't. Well, at least some of them aren't. I mean, I have a couple of children who have left home and who are supporting themselves and living entirely independent lives, except for the fact that they do depend on us for encouragement and support, maybe over the telephone. They come and visit. They are still part of our lives. But we're not providing any financial support. We're not giving them board under our roof. So are we wrong and are the critics right? Well, I'm not really worrying about criticism. I'm doing what I feel is right in my heart, and that is supporting and helping my kids as long as they need me. Because there is something that happens when we do that, and that is that we teach our children that it's good to help and encourage people, to support them, and to be part of the family team. And I am sure that in future years, they're going to be supporting and encouraging Andy and I. we are never going to have to worry about being older people who have to look after ourselves. We are always going to have family around us who love us. It's going to be my children's turn in the future to look after us. They are not going to put us into retirement places, nursing homes, not unless, of course, we have some medical condition that they are not able to look after. But they're not going to say to me, "Hey, Mum, we have our own lives now, our own families. We haven't got time for you anymore. We'll make the arrangements. We'll ship you out there. We'll make sure you've got a nice room, nice people to live with." No, I can't see my kids doing that. I can see that there is always going to be a place for me in their home, just as, at the moment, there is always going to be a place for them in ours. And it's not as if they're not doing anything anyway at home. While we're supporting them in their endeavors, they're helping with the family jobs, driving people around the place. I have a son at home still who gives me board. And to be quite honest, that money makes a lot of difference. As I say to my husband, he could give that money to some other person, some other landlord, but he gives it to me. And we need that money as a family. And in return, I'm quite happy to have him at home, to help him, to support him, talk over his day with him, to keep on encouraging him. Yes, there are no rules with families. I rather like the old idea of the extended family, where we live together and help each other when we need to, for as long as we need to, using our various talents and skills and health and time for the benefit of all those people that we love. So, unschooling to me isn't about bringing up our kids as quickly as possible, giving them the skills and talents that they will need to go out there, live independent lives as soon as possible, get wonderful jobs, and then we can sit back, rub our hands together with glee and say, "Hey, we did it. We trusted, unschooling worked. We're now free to do whatever we want to do." Now, I think unschooling is a lifelong thing, a lifelong commitment. That helping each other, giving of ourselves, recognizing other people's needs and being willing to respond. It's not always easy being a parent. I'm at the stage where theoretically I have a lot of free time, although I don't know where it's gone this week or last week, but yes, my children are fairly independent. Well, they're very independent. I don't have to do much for them at all. Maybe drive them around here and there, but some of my young adults do the driving as well. I don't cook. Imogen is our cook. I help with the housework, but my children are quite capable of running the house themselves. But it wasn't always so. Years ago, I had babies and toddlers, of course. Years ago, I never got a lot of sleep having to wake up in the night to look after those babies and toddlers. Years ago, I used to wonder how I was going to get through some of the difficult days. But of course I did. I got up each morning. Some mornings were full of joy. Other mornings, I just didn't want to be there. It was hard work. But I was there. I kept on seeing to the needs of my kids, however hard it got. And now, look what's happening these days. It's my kids who are looking after me. Many mornings, I still get up and wonder how I am going to get through the day. And that is because I don't sleep very well. Last night was a fairly good night, but the night before, I couldn't have got more than 2 hours of broken sleep. I just lie in bed in the middle of the night, and I can't turn off and go to sleep. Or I'll go to sleep and I'll wake up, and I won't be able to go back to sleep. And I have tried everything. A relaxing routine in the evening, not drinking coffee, not drinking alcohol, all sorts of things. Getting up in the night and not lying there and then coming back. I have Googled sleeplessness and I have tried a lot, but still I can't sleep. And I think to myself, why can I not sleep? Surely it would be in my interest to sleep. I pray about it and I think, why aren't my prayers being answered? Well, I don't know why, but I can count my blessings because I can get through each day. I mean, some days, like yesterday, I lay on the sofa and I didn't do much at all. I felt rather useless. And that is the hardest thing, I think, is to admit that I can't do what I'd like to do. To accept the situation. To accept I need the help of other people. And the other people are my children. Can I do anything for you, Mum? I'll do that for you, Mum. You go and sit down. You have a nap, Mum. We'll cope. We'll do everything for you. So I can't complain at all. So I don't need any sympathy about my sleepless nights, because those nights are balanced by my days where I really don't have to do a lot at all. Yes, there's loads of things I'd like to do, and I get frustrated sometimes when I can't do them. But I think that's part of life. We have to accept what comes our way each day. We can't always do what we want to do. We can't always do the good things that we want to do. Yeah, I sometimes think, you know, what I want to do is good. I want to help other people, and I can't do that. It's hard to step back and say, hey, that's okay. Maybe lying on the sofa today, not doing much at all, is what I'm supposed to be doing today. Just accepting that. It's hard sometimes to accept our lives just the way they are. One last idea. I was thinking about why we find it hard to let go of ideas that we know aren't working. We might parent in a certain way, and we can see that it's wrong, that we're making mistakes. We're not happy with the relationship maybe between us and our children. We set off along a certain parenting pathway, and we had big hopes and dreams. We thought we knew what we were doing, and somewhere along the way, things might have gone wrong. And it's years down the track, and we still can't admit that we're not where we should be. Why is it so hard to admit that we've made some mistakes and that we need to make some changes? Is it a pride thing? Don't we want to say, I've made a mistake? If in admitting we've made some mistakes, do we label all those years as a waste? Is that something we can't face? Yes, we have been doing things wrong for years. Oh, what a waste of all those years. Do we keep hoping that things will turn out right, that the old ideas will come right in the end? We only have to keep on going. It'll be okay. It can be hard looking back and recognizing that we have made mistakes and wasted time. And I was thinking about how we should stop, have the courage to say, yes, I have made some mistakes. I don't want my life to keep on going in the direction it is heading. I don't want to waste any more time. It's not too late to change. Because when we have courage to change, good things could happen. The future could be amazing. It's never too late to change pathways. A disjointed thought there maybe, but I hope you get the idea, the thought that's been going through my head. Not that I want to change the pathway we're on, unschooling. Somehow we landed here, and I'm very, very grateful for that. Grateful that we stopped going around and around in circles, trying other things, hoping each time that we went round the circle that it would be better next time. And of course it wasn't until we reached unschooling. Talking about never too late to change. Someone left a comment on my blog recently. They said they'd found unschooling and they were hoping that it wasn't too late. Well, I would say it's never too late to unschool. Even if your children are almost grown up, even if they are young adults. Unschooling is something lifelong. We unschool forever. It's an attitude, a mindset. We can have an unschooling relationship with our young adult children, our older adult children, anybody. Our children don't have to be small. We can adopt a lot of unschooling principles and apply them to all our relationships. We can accept our older children, listen to them, support them, encourage them, love them unconditionally. When our kids grow to adulthood that's not the end of it. That's not the end of unschooling. We want our kids to be part of our lives forever, and we want to be part of theirs. We need to keep on unschooling. I want to move on now to the couple of draft blog posts that I mentioned in the introduction to this episode. I have a lot of blog posts on my blog, and quite a few draft ones as well. I have shared a number of my blog post stories with you during episodes of this podcast, and earlier today, when I was thinking about what I wanted to speak about today, I was wondering if you think me sharing stories is a cop-out. If that's the easy way to do things, if I'm cheating in some way because I'm sharing material that I have already written. It's a bit like sharing my blog post stories in my upcoming book. I would love to hear your feedback about that. Do you get tired of me telling old stories, especially when I share the exact wording of some of them? Or is that okay? Are you hearing them for the first time? Maybe you don't read my blog. Maybe some of my blog post stories are hidden deep in the archive and you haven't yet stumbled across them. One thing I do like about sharing blog post stories is the fact that I've spent a long time writing them. I'm usually very happy with the wording of them. They're not usually random thoughts. So to me, they sound more together. I'm happier with the thoughts contained within them. They have been written, they have been edited, they have been published. They are something that I feel happy about. In contrast, sometimes when I'm just rambling on during an episode like I'm doing today, I make a lot of mistakes going round and round the circle. And then when I listen to the podcast later on, I think to myself, oh no, I forgot to say this and I forgot to say that. I think on the whole, sharing thoughts off the top of my head works best for a podcast. But maybe there are times when sharing stories is acceptable. Those times could include now, when I'm writing a book, when I haven't really got time to make big plans for podcast episodes. Is it better to share something from my blog than not have a podcast at all? I wonder what you think about that. Well, anyway, I found two blog posts that are in draft form on my blog. I was reading them over lunch today. They are not perfect posts by any means because otherwise I would have published them. But maybe there's something in them that's worth sharing. Now, the first one is called What to Do When Unschooling Kids Reach the Teenage Years. As I said earlier, I love my unschooling teenagers very much. I love all my kids. But in contrast to a lot of parents, I love my teenagers. These years are very special. I'm not going to read this blog post out word for word. I might read the other one. But this one, I just want to tell you about it. I wrote it about a year ago. Well, a year ago and a couple of months. Because it starts off, it's the Monday before Christmas. I'm sitting in a cafe with my daughter, Imogen. While we sip coffee, we chat about our plans for next year. Will I continue to blog about unschooling in 2017? From that introduction, you can see that I have the same thoughts every year. I'm rather predictable. Because I've been talking about whether I'm going to continue blogging about unschooling this year, 2018. As you know, I did spend last year blogging and podcasting about unschooling. Questioning what we're going to do at the start of every year, I guess, is a natural thing to do. And so Imogen and I had a conversation about my plans. And I was talking to her about the fact that there are a lot of good unschooling blogs out there. Most of them are written by mothers who are a lot younger than me. I asked Imogen if it was time for me to move on to something else, hand over the reins of spreading the unschooling message to younger mothers, mothers who seem to have everything under control. They seem to be unschooling and blogging about unschooling in a better way than I am. They're well informed. They're passionate about what they're writing about. I said to Imogen, they write about unschooling and gentle parenting, sharing all the ideas they're putting into action with their own children. They have built up big communities around their blogs. Other mothers can obviously relate to their posts. Yes, I am sometimes envious of these younger bloggers. Unlike me, they don't seem to be making any mistakes. You only have to listen to last week's podcast, episode 118, to know that I have made a lot of mistakes in my parenting and educating of my children. We started off unschooling okay. We lost our way. We came back. It hasn't been a perfect pathway. But a lot of these other younger bloggers are not making the same mistakes I did. They are very well informed, as I said. They have done their research. They are putting their ideas into action from day one. Maybe the internet has a lot to do with that. Unschooling information is easily available, and it wasn't easily available when my children were little. It was hard to come across even a book about unschooling, and of course there were no unschooling blogs. I was wondering whether younger mothers needed younger mothers as their role models, because we tend to relate to people of our own age better than anybody else. People that are going through the same stage of life as us tend to understand us better. So these were the thoughts I was having. And then one day, I received a lovely Facebook message. A mother took the time to say that she was delighted to discover my blog because there aren't many bloggers writing about teenagers and older unschoolers. Imogen and I discussed why there are a lot of younger mothers blogging about unschooling and fewer older unschooling mothers blogging. Why is there a shortage of older unschooling bloggers? That's the question I pondered. I went on to say to Imogen, I'm really fortunate. Many bloggers stop writing about their kids when they become teenagers. Their children no longer want their lives to be out there in public. But you don't mind me writing about you. You even let me interview you. I can post photos. Without you, I wouldn't have much of a blog. So maybe unschooling bloggers stop writing when their children reach the teenage years because of privacy issues. Yes, their teenagers no longer want their lives spread across the internet for everyone to read about. So I am particularly fortunate. Imogen also had an idea about why there is a shortage of older unschooling bloggers. She said, I bet some unschoolers stop blogging because they stop unschooling. It's fairly easy unschooling when kids are small. There seems to be a lot of time ahead. Why not relax and enjoy life? Then when a child becomes a teenager, things become serious. Parents start thinking about the future. Will their kids get into uni, get a job, have a successful life? They begin to put pressure on their kids to make up their minds about what they want to do. They are no longer happy for them to follow their interests in a relaxed way. One day everything is okay, and then suddenly, just because they've reached a certain age, things change. I asked Imogen whether I put pressure on her and her siblings when they reached the teenage years. And Imogen said no, life just continued on as normal. There was no need to change. Unschooling prepares everyone for the future. So I said to Imogen, so what would you say to a parent who wants to know what she should do now her child has reached the teenage years? And Imogen said, keep trusting. Day by day, gradually and naturally, our kids are growing into the people they are meant to be. They will get there. All we have to do is live one day at a time. Keep trusting. Don't jump ship. By the end of that blog post, of course, I had decided to keep on blogging about unschooling. The second draft blog post is untitled. I didn't even get that far. But I do remember the day I wrote it. I wrote it after I read another blogger's post about teenagers. A homeschooling mother wrote about how she had just made a lot of rules for her teenagers. And all her readers stopped by to congratulate her, to say that she was a very responsible mother. The teenage years are very difficult. Parents have to be very careful. They have to keep their children safe. There's a lot of dangers out there in the world. And we have to keep our children away from them. Do all we can, as I said, to keep them safe. And the way to do that is to make rules. Do our duty. It might be hard, but we have to stay firm. Make sure our teenagers obey those rules. Even if we battle and life becomes difficult, we can't give in because it's our duty. So I wrote an answering blog post and then didn't post it. Not that I think any of the people who read that rules blog post would come over to my blog and read my post. It wasn't a direct answer. I wasn't linking up with the first blog post. I don't know. I just didn't post it for some reason. Maybe because it goes against the grain. Maybe I thought that a lot of people would disagree with me. Maybe I didn't want to set up a battle in my comments box. I'm quite happy to defend my opinions. I believe totally in the unschooling principles. But yes, I don't like to ruffle other people's feathers. But of course, we have to be brave. We have to put new ideas out there. We have to be prepared to discuss them, to challenge not only our own thoughts, but other people's as well. So that's what I'm doing today. I said, if parents don't say no and make rules their teenagers must abide by, are they irresponsible? Perhaps children need to be told such things as, you can't go to that late night party. You can't wear that immodest dress. Alcohol? Drugs? No way. I don't want you associating with those teenagers. They are a bad influence. You can't play that computer game. It's too violent. You can't smoke. No, you can't read that book. It's full of coarse language. Because is it really okay if a child does any of these things? Should we make strict rules about such things in order to protect our children? Should we explain our reasons but say an emphatic no? We could think, sometimes we have to be tough because we love. We have to lay down the rules even if our children protest. Parenting isn't about being popular, you know. We can't sidestep our mothering duty. We might be in for some battles, but that's to be expected. It's part of keeping our kids safe. It's just what we have to do. Or is it? What if our kids don't want to do any of the above things in the first place? Then there wouldn't be any need for rules, would there? Is it possible to bring up children so that we can trust them to make the right choices without us telling them what they can and cannot do? I think it is. Some people might object. Teenagers can't be trusted. They're too young to make their own decisions. They are easily swayed by the opinions of others. Maybe the objectors would be right if trusting is all about letting children go their own way and accepting whatever they do, no matter what that may be. Do what you like. But that's not responsible parenting. In order to trust our children, we have to be so connected to them that they will listen to and accept our values, rather than be influenced by the values of outsiders. So how do we do this? It's hard to explain in a few words. I think it's all to do with treating our children with respect and unconditional love, so that they will trust and respect and follow our example. This isn't easy, but then again, policing rules isn't easy either. Hey girls, what would you say if I said I won't let you go to an all-night party? You can't smoke, and you better not even think about dressing immodestly. And if you want to go to see an X-rated movie, or read an unsuitable book, well, you're not going to be allowed to. My voice dies away. My girls are giggling. Are you serious, Mum? You don't have to tell us we can't do those things. We don't want to do them. Is it a foregone conclusion that children are going to want to do things parents aren't happy about? Do we really need to make lots of rules? There is a problem with writing a post like this one, which goes against the opinion and practices of the majority. What if I'm wrong? What if my children make some poor choices? They could end up making mistakes. Everyone will criticize my parenting, and then I might wish I'd been more vigilant and protected my children with rules. Am I confident that my children will never make any mistakes? No, I'm not. I make mistakes. We all make them. No one is perfect. Why should my children be any different? What I am confident about is this. If my teenagers ever get into trouble, they will come and talk to me and we can sort things out. They'll do this because they trust me. And I trust them. So that was my blog post. Maybe I ought to publish it. I don't know. So that's the end of my blog post stories for today. If you don't mind, I might share a few more as I'm writing my unschooling book. Yes, choose a story from my archive and then discuss it maybe. Let me know what you think of that idea. Is it better to have a shorter episode with content that I have already prepared? Or should I just leave my podcast for a few weeks until I've got to the end of the next draft of my unschooling book? Please let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Yes, I'd love to invite you to stop by my blog, Stories of an Unschooling Family. I will leave some show notes there. If I haven't got any new blog posts, I hope you will understand. Perhaps you will dip into my archive. You could have a look and see what's in my sidebar. I have been embedding a few things that my daughters are doing. Some videos, some vlogs that Imogen and Sophie are making at the moment, as well as their latest blog posts. So I think that's all I want to share with you today. I've come to the end of episode 119. Hopefully it won't take me very long to edit this file, then I can get it uploaded and surprise people. Yes, there will be a podcast this week after all. And then later, I will get back to my unschooling book. I would like to thank you for listening to this episode. I hope everybody has a very happy unschooling week. And until next time, don't forget to trust, respect, and love unconditionally.